Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szöveg értése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on this CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There will be three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections, in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is exactly 30 minutes long. Good luck! Task 1. In this section, you will hear an interview with Jen Schaffer, the author of a new book. Your task is to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true. Write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections, to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true, B means false, C means the text does not say. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Jen, would you like to tell us a few words about your new book? As I understand, it is about the Olympics. Isn't that right?
Quite, and it's definitely not only about the London Games. It's more about some very special Olympic medal winners from both the 2012 and earlier Olympics and their outstanding achievements. Rather about the Olympic spirit in general.
You said special, but all Olympic medal winners are special in some ways, aren't they?
Well, Olympians are indeed an interesting breed. They strive against life and limb to compete, prove themselves, represent their country, and be the best in the world at something. In my book, I tell my readers 13 incredible stories about Olympians doing everything they can to win, to finish, or even to compete. Now, these are the 13 wildest stories about Olympic athletes and what they'll do for a chance at the gold.
Could you give us a taste of what sort of stories these are?
Well, there's the story of American sprinter Betty Robinson, for example. She was originally the winner of the Olympic 100 meter for women in the 1928 Amsterdam Olympics. But there was no more running in her future when she was in a plane crash in 1931. Now, it's one thing to be in a plane crash and survive, and it's another to be wrongly pronounced legally dead and then tossed into the trunk of a car. When the undertaker realized she wasn't dead, they took her to the hospital, and she lay paralyzed in a coma for 7 months. After losing the ability to walk, you might think she'd take some time off, relax a bit, but that isn't Betty Robinson. Not only did she learn to walk again, but in the 1936 Summer Olympics, she took home a gold medal in the 4x100-meter relay.
Now, that really is incredible.
Or, to take another example, here's a story of Japanese gymnast Shun Fujimoto. In everyday life, continuing on with your life while dealing with a broken bone is a great way for everyone to think you're an idiot. When it happens in the Olympics, you're set for future fame. Fujimoto broke his knee during his floor exercise routine in the 1976 Summer Olympics, but he continued to compete to score a 9.5 on the pommel horse and a 9.7 on the rings. The final dismount from the rings is agonizing to watch, and just like a train wreck, you can't look away. Hitting the ground from an 8-foot drop, raised his arms in a perfect finish just before collapsing in agony. Fujimoto insisted he didn't want to let his team down, and his participation in the pommel horse and rings events pushed Japan into winning the gold. At least when they asked him if he would do it again, he said no.
Thanks a lot, Jen. I can assure you that now you have at least one enthusiastic reader who will definitely buy your book.
You're very welcome.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Jen, would you like to tell us a few words about your new book? As I understand, it is about the Olympics. Isn't that right?
Not quite. And it's definitely not only about the London Games. It's more about some very special Olympic medal winners from both the 2012 and earlier Olympics and their outstanding achievements. Or rather about the Olympic spirit in general.
You said special, but all Olympic medal winners are special in some ways, aren't they?
Well, Olympians are indeed an interesting breed. They strive against life and limb to compete, prove themselves, represent their country, and be the best in the world at something. In my book, I tell my readers 13 incredible stories about Olympians doing everything they can to win, to finish, or even to compete. Now, these are the 13 wildest stories about Olympic athletes and what they'll do for a chance at the gold.
Could you give us a taste of what sort of stories these are?
Well, there's the story of American sprinter Betty Robinson, for example. She was originally the winner of the Olympic 100 meter for women in the 1928 Amsterdam Olympics. But there was no more running in her future when she was in a plane crash in 1931. Now, it's one thing to be in a plane crash and survive, and it's another to be wrongly pronounced legally dead and then tossed into the trunk of a car. When the undertaker realized she wasn't dead, they took her to the hospital, and she lay paralyzed in a coma for 7 months. After losing the ability to walk, you might think she'd take some time off, relax a bit, but that isn't Betty Robinson. Not only did she learn to walk again, but in the 1936 Summer Olympics, she took home a gold medal in the 4x100-meter relay.
Now, that really is incredible.
Or, to take another example, here's a story of Japanese gymnast Shun Fujimoto. In everyday life, continuing on with your life while dealing with a broken bone is a great way for everyone to think you're an idiot. When it happens in the Olympics, you're set for future fame. Fujimoto broke his knee during his floor exercise routine in the 1976 Summer Olympics, but he continued to compete to score a 9.5 on the pommel horse and a 9.7 on the rings. The final dismount from the rings is agonizing to watch, and just like a train wreck, you can't look away. Hitting the ground from an 8-foot drop, raised his arms in a perfect finish just before collapsing in agony. Fujimoto insisted he didn't want to let his team down, and his participation in the pommel horse and rings events pushed Japan into winning the gold. At least when they asked him if he would do it again, he said, no.
Thanks a lot, Jen. I can assure you that now you have at least one enthusiastic reader who will definitely buy your book.
You're very welcome.
That is the end of Task 1. Task 2. In this section, you will hear a radio report about a publicity stunt performed by Prince Andrew, Duke of York. Your task will be to circle the letter or letters of the correct answer or answers in the boxes on the right. Please note that in this task, both answers may be correct. This means you will have to circle either A or B, or both A and B. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time, we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
Watch out, Tom Cruise. When it comes to climbing up and down the exterior walls of skyscrapers, you may have some competition from Britain's Prince Andrew, Duke of York. So at last we know why he's called His Royal Highness. The 52-year-old prince raised nearly £300,000 for charity on Monday, when he and 40 others, among them Foreign Secretary William Hague's wife, Fionn, abseiled down London's Shard, the tallest building in Europe. The money raised will go to an educational charity called the Outward Bound. The prince, middle son and third child of Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip, is chairman of the charity organisation. According to published reports, the 30-minute daredevil stunt began when the prince, fourth in line to the British throne, climbed out from the 87th floor, just below the top of the 1,016-foot tower, and descended almost to the ground. The ex-Royal Naval helicopter pilot, who trained for the challenge with the Royal Marine Commandos in Scotland in recent months, made the descent safely and without great drama. The Duke, nicknamed Air Miles Andy after his penchant for luxury flights, got the idea for the descent after watching from his office in Buckingham Palace as the dramatic new addition to the London skyline took shape. Back on firm ground, the divorced father of two was asked if he enjoyed it. "Yes, thank you," he replied rather curtly. "I have to say that the most difficult bit was walking up the last 10 flights of stairs. You know, the uppermost section of the building is too narrow for a lift. The most scary bit was actually stepping out over the edge, particularly because it was rather slippery up there. It's also a long way down, but it's a fantastic view." The climbers descended 784 feet from the Shard's 87th floor to a controlled landing on a handy platform on the 20th floor. The final leg of the descent for the 40 brave abseilers was somewhat easier than the first. They all took the lift. Andrew's mark in history is indelible because no more abseiling will be allowed from the Shard. And to make absolutely certain, as he told us instantly afterwards, "I'm never doing it again."
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
"Watch out, Tom Cruise. When it comes to climbing up and down the exterior walls of skyscrapers, you may have some competition from Britain's Prince Andrew, Duke of York. So at last we know why he's called His Royal Highness." The 52-year-old prince raised nearly £300,000 for charity on Monday when he and 40 others, among them Foreign Secretary William Hague's wife, Fionn, abseiled down London's Shard, the tallest building in Europe. The money raised will go to an educational charity called the Outward Bound. The prince, middle son and third child of Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip, is chairman of the charity organisation. According to published reports, the 30-minute daredevil stunt began when the prince, fourth in line to the British throne, climbed out from the 87th floor, just below the top of the 1,016-foot tower, and descended almost to the ground. The ex-Royal Naval helicopter pilot, who trained for the challenge with the Royal Marine Commandos in Scotland in recent months, made the descent safely and without great drama. The Duke, nicknamed Air Miles Andy after his penchant for luxury flights, got the idea for the descent after watching from his office in Buckingham Palace as the dramatic new addition to the London skyline took shape. Back on firm ground, the divorced father of two was asked if he enjoyed it. "Yes, thank you," he replied rather curtly. "I have to say that the most difficult bit was walking up the last 10 flights of stairs. You know, the uppermost section of the building is too narrow for a lift. The most scary bit was actually stepping out over the edge, particularly because it was rather slippery up there. It's also a long way down, but it's a fantastic view." The climbers descended 784 feet from the Shard's 87th floor to a controlled landing on a handy platform on the 20th floor. The final leg of the descent for the 40 brave abseilers was somewhat easier than the first. They all took the lift. Andrew's mark in history is indelible because no more abseiling will be allowed from the Shard. And to make absolutely certain, as he told us instantly afterwards, "I'm never doing it again."
Is the end of task 2. Task 3. In this section, you will hear an interview with Joe Young, a freelance musician and founder of Sonic Cult. Your task will be to complete the sentences with the exact words you hear in the text. Write one word in each gap, that is, two words in each item. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
This is my life story. This is not a song.
Do you remember how your career began?
I started playing guitar when I was 7. One night, I had a dream. I was playing a crazy-looking guitar, and the next morning, I even started to draw it. My dad saw the picture and asked me if I'd like to go buy one. So we did that day, and then he added, "But you got to get lessons if we get a guitar." And so my fate was sealed from there.
When did it become serious?
When I was 15, I became totally obsessed with playing jazz. I wasn't very good, but I practiced 3 or 4 hours a day that year and gradually got more and more noticed by other musicians. I got a lawn renovation job to pay for some lessons with an awesome teacher I had found.
What is the most memorable experience of your life?
When I was 19, I moved out of my parents' home in California and drove across country. I moved to New York to leave the competitive music scene behind and study with the greats. For years, I had dreamed of studying with guitarist John Abercrombie. I remember my car was full of musical equipment, 3 guitars, a couple of amps, and pedals, which didn't leave a lot of space for other things like clothing. In my first place in New York, I slept on a basement floor in a house in the Bronx.
So what happened in New York?
I went to City College of New York, part-time, playing gigs on the side. One semester, one of my teachers mentioned that John Abercrombie was coming to play at the year-end concert. The week of the concert, we found that he was going to play with our jazz band and that he would feature a dueling guitar section, myself and Abercrombie trading solos. The whole music program, students and faculty, were going to be there in attendance. Normally, I don't get stage fright too badly, but this was an entirely different situation. I felt weak and nervous the whole day leading up to the show. The show went great, and after it was done, I asked if he'd give me lessons. He accepted me as a student. Studying with him was a major turning point in my musical life.
How would you best describe yourself?
Somebody who follows his gut instincts above anything else. Everybody has advice, but usually their advice is to go the path that they themselves walked. I've singled out a few mentors in my life to guide me, but other than that, I've made my decisions based on raw intuition. I'm a very passionate person, and I believe in following one's feelings. I see myself as a borderline workaholic and a goofy, upbeat person at the same time.
Joe, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
But it's the only life for us to know. You know, they know, we can have much more. But what you think we hustling for? Let's go.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
This is my life story. This is not a song.
Do you remember how your career began?
I started playing guitar when I was 7. One night, I had a dream. I was playing a crazy-looking guitar, and the next morning, I even started to draw it. My dad saw the picture and asked me if I'd like to go buy one. So we did that day, and then he added, "But you got to get lessons if we get a guitar." And so my fate was sealed from there.
When did it become serious?
When I was 15, I became totally obsessed with playing jazz. I wasn't very good, but I practiced 3 or 4 hours a day that year and gradually got more and more noticed by other musicians. I got a lawn renovation job to pay for some lessons with an awesome teacher I had found.
What is the most memorable experience of your life?
When I was 19, I moved out of my parents' home in California and drove across country. I moved to New York to leave the competitive music scene behind and study with the greats. For years, I had dreamed of studying with guitarist John Abercrombie. I remember my car was full of musical equipment, 3 guitars, a couple of amps, and pedals, which didn't leave a lot of space for other things like clothing. In my first place in New York, I slept on a basement floor in a house in the Bronx.
So what happened in New York?
I went to City College of New York, part-time, playing gigs on the side. One semester, one of my teachers mentioned that John Abercrombie was coming to play at the year-end concert. The week of the concert, we found that he was going to play with our jazz band and that he would feature a dueling guitar section, myself and Abercrombie trading solos. The whole music program, students and faculty, were going to be there in attendance. Normally, I don't get stage fright too badly, but this was an entirely different situation. I felt weak and nervous the whole day leading up to the show. The show went great, and after it was done, I asked if he'd give me lessons. He accepted me as a student. Studying with him was a major turning point in my musical life.
How would you best describe yourself?
Somebody who follows his gut instincts above anything else. Everybody has advice, but usually their advice is to go the path that they themselves walked. I've singled out a few mentors in my life to guide me, but other than that, I made my decisions based on raw intuition. I'm a very passionate person, and I believe in following one's feelings. I see myself as a borderline workaholic and a goofy, upbeat person at the same time.
Joe, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
But it's the only life for us to know. You know, they know, we can have much more. But what you think we hustling for? Let's go.
That is the end of Task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.